I'd like to call this meeting of the House Education Policy Committee to order. Members, please take your seats. There is a quorum present. Can I have a motion to approve the minutes for Tuesday, February 25th? So moved. Representative Herr moves the approval of the minutes for Tuesday, February 25th. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes for Tuesday, February 25th are approved. And next up, we have Representative Hewitt's House File 1940. Now, Representative Hewitt, I should have told you this, but when you leave our committee midstream, when you come back to present a bill, you should have brought treats. But because I didn't warn you ahead of time, we won't have that expectation then. But we do miss you. Just to let you know.
Madam Chair, and in my head right now, Bon Jovi is playing Who Said You Can't Come Home, right?
Yes, exactly. Yes. Wonderful, wonderful. So House File 1940 is before us. Members, just a reminder, we did have this bill up last year. It was originally included in our policy bill, but then it was noticed the way it was drafted would have cost a little bit of a fiscal note, so it got pulled. Things have been worked out. And so because of that, I wanted a little bit more testimony when it came to doing the DE2 amendment. So the author has a DE2 amendment. I move for Representative Hewitt the DE2 amendment. Would you like to speak to that amendment?
Madam Chair, it puts the bill in the position in the place I want it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I do realize I did not move the bill itself. So to get the bill before the committee, the chair moves that House File 1940 be recommended for placement on the general register. Now, Representative Hewitt, would you like to explain your DE2 amendment or have Mr. Lindell, whichever works?
I'm sorry.
Go ahead and explain your DE2 amendment, Representative Hewitt.
Again, it puts the bill in the position that we wanted it to and takes care of the fiscal concern.
Yeah. Mr. Lindell, did you have anything to add?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I won't go into great detail on the ADSIS program. It's an intervention program where special ed dollars are used to keep kids from being identified as special education. One of the problems some folks, some districts have noticed is that a student can have an IEP in a an area that's not related to the tutoring or not related to the interventions. And because of that, they were ineligible for the ADSA services because the department says if you have an IEP, you could not be eligible for those services. This would allow districts to serve students with an IEP in a non-related area, but they could not displace a student that does not have an IEP. They would have to do it within the confines of the program as outlined, and so there would be no fiscal implications. If you want to bring up Mr. Cordy or just have Mr. Cordy give the thumbs up, seeing that they've worked on the language, whatever's your.
Well, let's see first. Members, do we have any questions on the DE2 amendment? Seeing none, we have the DE2 amendment before us. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. So now we have House File 1940 before us as amended. Any final words, Representative Hewitt?
No, this is a great bill, and it'll allow us to get better quality and better services to our students in need.
Thank you. So I renew the motion to move House File 1940 as amended to the General Registry. Any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? House File 1940, it's moved as amended to the General Registry.
Thank you.
Record time, Representative Hewitt, thank you. So I have the next three bills, so I'm gonna move to the testifier table and give the gavel over to Representative Kunesh-Podin.
Members, we have House File 1868 of Cherry O. Kim's on the agenda today.
We held a full hearing on this bill last year during our March 6th meeting and voted to place it on the general registrar. Pursuant to House Rule 4.20, House File 1868 was returned to our committee at the end of 2019 session. Because we have previously heard and voted on this bill, today we will be voting to send the bill back to the general registrar without further public testimony. Chair Yao-Kim, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, I would like to move House File 1868 to general registry.
Chair Yao-Kim moves House File 1868 to be placed on the general register. Chair Yao-Kim, I believe you have a DE1 amendment to get the bill in the shape you would like to hear it. Would you like to move your amendment?
Yes, I would like to move the DE1 amendment and maybe describe it here.
Please do.
Members, as the bill left the committee, it went to finance and then to the House floor, and there is some amendments that have been incorporated. Some good ideas. I think both of them were for Representative Erickson. I want to call your attention to lines 1.18 to 1.19. Where it says a qualified teacher is defined in sections 122A.16. It was just a way to qualify who a student media advisor is. And then on 2.4, the language that was added was freedom of speech includes freedom to express political viewpoints. Some members, I would love you to adopt the amendment so we can get the bill into the shape that it left the House floor.
All right. Chair Yao-Kim moves the DE1 amendment. Do you need to speak any more to your amendment?
No.
All right. Then Chair Yao-Kim renews her motion to adopt the DE1 amendment. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Is there any further discussion on this bill? Representative Scott, do you have a question?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I do have a couple of questions for the author. Mm-hmm. Since we have a DE now before us that replaces the bill from last year, can a student journalist publish a critical opinion about someone or reveal like an unpleasant truth so long as the information is not false according to this bill?
Madam Chair, Representative Scott, we had lengthy testimony on that last year, so just as a quick refresher, if you look at lines 2.17 to 2.24, it goes directly to that point of what protected speech is not, and especially if you look at 2.2.2.24, student policies that school districts have put in place overrides this amendment. So if I'm not sure if you're thinking of something that's bullying or something, even if it's true, it's just not right, the school district would still have control over that.
Representative Scott.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks for that answer. And under subdivision 3 then, who makes the determination if something is protected or not protected, and who can bring an allegation of a violation?
Chair Yao-Kim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Scott. Once again, in 2.17 to 2.24, it has very strict definitions of what is not protected speech, and that would still be under the purview of the administration.
Representative Scott.
Thank you. Where does it specify that it's the administrator that brings the...
Chair Yao-Kim.
Representative Scott. Well, I guess I'm talking more about the 2.22 to 2.24 if it breaks the school district rules. Otherwise, there's clear definitions in legal statute of what defamatory is. The profane, harassing, threatening, or intimidating would also fall under school policy. So the constitutes of unwarranted invasion of privacy, school policy, and state law. And then also 2.20 violates federal or state law. 2.21 causes a material and substantial disruption of school activities. That would be the district deciding that. No one else would be able to decide that.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, and thank you, Madam Chair. And for final question then, so is there any disciplinary action in articulated in this bill for a student that might violate any of these actions, or is that up to the individual school district?
Chair Yao-Kim.
Madam Chair, Representative Scott, that would be up to the individual school district. Any disciplinary stuff that is already in state law isn't being changed by this.
Thank you. Representative Gruenhagen, you had a question.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Joachim, I remember this bill from last year, and I think we had the administrator's representative and a specific superintendent in a district where this had become an mm-hmm. issue testify strongly against the bill. So with this DE1 amendment, I tend to support what's currently in statute, which gives oversight by local administration on what is published. And, you know, I'm not a lawyer, but reading this bill, I think we're weakening that position. And that concerns me because I do think that we pay superintendents and administrators excellent money to be able to make those determinations. And having been chief negotiator in for certified staff for 6 years on my school, when I was on the school board, you know, one of the things I stood strongly against was negotiating away supervisory rights. And so my concern is that this language, even under the D1 amendment, starts moving us into weakening the position of administration in terms of supervision of the media. And that's where I guess I have my strong concern about. Any thoughts about that?
Representative Gruenhagen, I do want to remind you that this bill is exactly what we heard, and it was passed through last year. And so Chair Joachim.
Thank you. I'll respond. Representative Gruenhagen, I'm sorry to hear that you changed your mind. You actually did vote in favor for it last year as it left committee. And I think we made it stronger with Representative Erickson's amendments on the floor. That being said, I know Mr. Aronson spoke against it. Yeah, it was a voice vote. I listened to the tape. Mr. Aronson spoke against it. Mr. Aronson spoke against it. But we did have teachers and students that had been affected by this law come and testify. So that might be what you remember. And we did have a surprise testimony from, I believe it was, oh my gosh, my mind just stopped. It was up by where my aunt lives. St. Francis came down and spoke because Mr. Aronson had kind of had said one thing and she said another, and then we just kind of put that to a side and we voted on the bill. So that might be part of what you're remembering.
Just
Representative Gruenhagen.
Oh, Madam Chair, yeah, thanks for that. If I did vote for it, it might have been a cough rather than a yes. But anyway, I just don't remember that. But be that as it may, call it skepticism. I just would rather leave it like it is. I just don't want to see this. I've seen too many times where you change the language in a contract, and it tends to weaken the supervisory oversight, and that concerns me. So I will be a no on this bill for the time being. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Gruenhagen. Is there any more? Did you have a reply to that? Chair Yelkin.
Okay. Closing comment.
Are there any other points of discussion? All right. Well, seeing none,
closing comments, please. Thank
Pardon?
You. I'm just going to have some closing comments.
Okay,
quick.
Thank you.
Thank you. I wish Representative Erdahl was here. He's a strong supporter and is a co-author on the bill. And this really does just allow students to make sure that they can exercise their First Amendment rights in a safe setting where there's adults to help with supervision. And I do understand some concerns about worrying about that getting out of hand, but that's part of our job in education, is to make sure students know how to practice these things in a safe environment and move it on forward. And it lines up with what we had for decades after Tinker v. Des Moines. And I think we should set it on the House floor the way we had it last year, and we'll see what happens in the Senate. So, Madam Chair, I would ask the members for their support.
Okay. So Chair Joachim renews the motion that House File 1868 is amended and be placed on the General Register. Oops. Those in favor of the motion, say yes.
Yes.
Those opposed, say nay.
Nay.
The motion prevails. House File 1868 is amended. As amended, is recommended for placement on the General Register. There we go. All right. Next we have Chair Joachim's Licensure provisions modified, House File 3580, teacher licensure provisions modified, professional educator licensing and standard board composition modified, rulemaking authorized, and technical changes made. Members, let's see, would you like to move your bill, Chair Yalkeem?
Yes, members, I'd like to move House File 3590 to government operations.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, I'm getting, huh?
3580.
3580, I have the wrong number on my notes here. Oh. 3580, the government operations and elections. Thank you.
Great. So Chair Yalkeem moves House File 3580 to be re-referred to the Government Operations Committee. Members, the author has an amendment to get the bill in shape that she would, so she could, in an order that she would like to discuss it. Chair Yalkeem, would you like to move your author's amendment?
Thank you, members. I'm sorry, these are not very loud. I hope you can still hear me. I'm getting a cold, so I don't want to shout too loud. Madam Chair and members, thank you for hearing this bill. This was brought forward to us by the Professional Educator Licensing and Standard Board. Some of the language the board brought to us last year didn't quite make it through all the way through conference committee, so that's included in this language, and I have testifiers here to speak to that. But first, I have an A1 amendment before us that I would like to move to get the bill in the shape I'd like to discuss.
All right. Chair Yalkeem moves the A1 amendment. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say.
Chair, oh. Did you want me to explain the amendment?
Just please do.
Folks know what it is.
Please do.
Because it is a little bit of a change, and section that you'll actually hear more about when we have the MDE before us, the MDE's bills before us. I just wanted to give you the heads up that this removes the basic skills test from the teacher licensure program. They still have to take all their pedagogical tests and the EDTPA. And other tests. This just helps, non-traditional teachers coming in, kind of think of it like non-traditional teachers, like teachers like people like me who just got into grad school without having to take a GRE because I haven't had math in a really long time. So this helps our non-traditional teachers going through other pathways not have to take the math and reading test because they still have to take it through their pedagogical testing and make sure they know the core curriculum that they're teaching, and they have a lot of other tests that they're taking. But I wanted you to know what the amendment did before you voted on it.
All right. I believe Chair Yalkeem has moved the A1 amendment. Is there any other discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. House File 3580 is now before the committee. Chair Yalkeem, would you please present your bill?
Thank you. So a little background. Like I said, in 2017, the legislature passed legislation combining the services provided by the Board of Teaching and the Minnesota Department of Education's Educator Licensing Division. Wow, now I know why they combined it. Into one entity that we lovingly call PELSB, which is the Professional Educators Licensing and Standards Board. This board is now charged with licensing all the teachers in our state. PELSB has been functioning in their new structure for almost 2 years now, and with all newer things, sometimes they need a few tweaks once they've gotten out on the road and driven. So they've been running for a while and need some changes to do their jobs. There are practical changes that are reflected in House File 3580, as amended before you today, and with me I have Alex Luizzi, the Executive Director of PELSB, here to walk us through the bill. I also have Elena Bailey and Board Member Jim McLautsich, which I always get wrong, here in case we have technical questions. So I will kick it over to Mr. Luizzi.
Welcome to the committee, and please remember to identify yourself for the record, and you may begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Alex Luizzi. I'm the Executive Director of PELSB, the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board. I'd like to thank Chair Yalkeem for authoring this bill and bringing this forward. As she stated, a lot of these pieces were in a bill last year. The majority of them are technical, but I'd like to walk through each one as quickly as I can just to make you aware of each piece. So I'll go through section by section. Section 1 is a technical piece. Right now, a Tier 4 teacher who is on a special permission might not fit under the definition of teacher in statute, so we just added the word permission to the definition of teacher. A permission is someone who holds a Tier 3 or a Tier 4 or possibly a Tier 2 license. We wanted them to be considered a teacher by the definition in statute as well, so it's just a technical piece. Section 2 is also technical. We use the word licensure area often when we're talking about field or subject area. We just, all those three terms are interchangeable, so we wanted to make sure that was included in statute. Sections 3 and 4 are both technical. There's a lot of confusion within teacher preparation program and teacher preparation provider. We just wanted to make sure the language in statute aligns with what's in rule. For example, the term non-conventional is no longer used as a program type. So that's deleted in there, and then the language for alternative and traditional teacher preparation is moved to the provider section instead of the program section. Sections 5 and 6 are not technical. They're about our board composition. So we currently are an 11-member board, all volunteers. Based on the current composition, 6 of those members are under the teacher category, and yet one of those teacher positions is a teacher in teacher preparation, a teacher preparation provider, educator, so not a classroom teacher. Based on the amount of workload that we have with teacher discipline cases, teacher licensure cases, the board has a tremendous workload that they do outside of board meetings. So we are proposing adding 2 teacher members that are broad categories, not listed specifically in statute, so the governor has some authority to decide what type of a teacher would fit that category. And then moving the teacher who's in teacher preparation outside of a teacher member so that that section is specifically for classroom teachers, and then highlighting that there's still that separate board member who will represent teacher preparation providers broadly as well. Section 7 is technical. It's just removing old language that talks about Pelsby's location. We now have a location, so we don't need that in statute anymore. And we're in Bandana Square for those of you that want to come visit us. Section 8 is a technical piece. There's a statute 122A.092 subdivision 1 actually gives the board rulemaking authority over alternative pathways, but we wanted to close the loop because that subdivision 2451 wasn't included in this other rulemaking place. We now have a rulemaking specialist who is helping us clean up all of those closing the loops in our rulemaking as well. So that's just a technical piece there. Section 9 is also technical. Licensure via portfolio, when someone completes a licensure via portfolio, it only can lead to a Tier 3 license, so it's just clarifying that section in the portfolio statute that Tier 3 license is the only license available for licensure via portfolio. Section 10 is not technical. This currently says for a Tier 2 individual, you can receive a Tier 2 license by being enrolled in a program, a teacher preparation program. Right now it says Minnesota approved. However, specifically in the areas of blind, visually impaired, and American Sign Language licensure, we have no program in Minnesota. There is a program for blind, visually impaired right across the border in North Dakota, and there are some great online programs for American Sign Language. So we're just recommending changing the language to state approved. So licensure programs in other states in those specific areas, someone could be living in Minnesota teaching on a Tier 2 license while enrolled in those programs. We've been specifically, North Dakota State University came to us with this recommendation, and we believe it would help those two licensure areas greatly. Sections 11 and 12 are related to what we were just talking about, actually, the testing piece. Right now, every candidate in Minnesota has to take the EdTPA as part of their teacher preparation program. When they complete their teacher preparation program, they also have to take a multiple choice pedagogy exam. This is just saying that if they receive a high enough score, we have a passing score at Pelsby that we have for the EdTPA, they could choose not to take the pedagogy exam, pedagogy multiple choice exam. It doesn't require the EdTPA. Instead, it just provides candidates that ability to do one or the other and could potentially save a lot of candidates the extra funds to take the pedagogy exam. The EdTPA, we believe, is a better measure of a candidate's understanding of pedagogy than a multiple choice exam. Sections 13 and 14 are also not technical. This is about licensure renewal. Currently, cultural competence training and meeting the needs of English language learners are part of a broad paragraph around licensure renewal for Tier 3 and Tier 4 teachers. In this paragraph, the end of the paragraph says that an individual can be waived of all the requirements in the above paragraph if they submit their summative evaluation through their teacher development and evaluation program. That summative evaluation does not necessarily include aspects of cultural competence training or meeting the needs of English language learners. So we recommend taking those sections from that top paragraph and just moving them below that, so a teacher can't simply submit their summative evaluation and be waived from what we believe are critical trainings for teachers, Tier 3 and Tier 4 teachers, for cultural competence training and meeting the needs of English language learners. Section 15 is technical. This is just making sure that all references to colleges and universities when talking about teacher preparation are removed, because now in Minnesota, you can be a teacher preparation provider that's not a college and university. So that's just a language change to make that technical. Section 16 and 17 are new this year. We did not have these last year. We are now overseeing the administration of the Collaborative Urban Educator and Greater Minnesota Educator Grant. And in that administration, we've been talking with grant applicants and those that received the grants, and they just suggested two changes. One, the ability to give them grant funds for two consecutive years to provide more program stability, and then to move their reporting requirement to the end of an academic year instead of the end of a calendar year. That makes more sense for when they would report how their programs are doing. And then finally, the last section, section 18, is related to the STAR report. This is the staff automated reporting system that collects from districts all licensed and non-licensed teachers or non-licensed individuals working in classrooms. This used to be part of the Department of Ed's, it used to fall under the Department of Ed. However, when Pelsby was created, it was moved to Pelsby to oversee STAR, so we have the IT system and the staff member that went along with this. However, there's non-licensee data as part of the STAR report that Pelsby does not have authority over, nor should be able to see. It's private data. So we're recommending moving this back to the Department of Ed. All the public data that we, all the data that we use from the STAR report is public data, so that we could still access that to do our compliance report. But the Department of Ed, who uses both the license and the non-licensed data for reporting purposes on their website, it seemed to be a better fit there. So that's just moving that back, and we would propose, of course, moving the funding for the staff member to that, back to the Department of Ed as well. That's our bill.
Well, wonderful. Thank you. Is there, there are two additional testifiers. Do we want to wait for questions after everybody has testified, or do you want, okay, we will wait for questions until after everybody has testified. So next we have Dr. Rhonda Bonestetter and Laura Mogelson, if you would like to join us also at the testifying table. There. Pardon? Oh, thank you. You may please go ahead. Please make sure that you identify yourself and you can begin your testifying.
Thank you. My name is Dr. Rhonda Bonestetter. I'm a professor of education at Southwest Minnesota State University, and I'm also the president for the Minnesota Association of Colleges of Teacher Education, and it's on their behalf that I'm speaking to you today. MACTE would like to let you know that we support Section 6, Subdivision 2, the addition of two more teacher representatives to Pelsby, given the additional work of reviewing and updating all unit and program rules. It really requires board members to have knowledge of the intent and the implication of those proposed changes and to be able to serve in those subcommittees that deal with those updates. We support Section 12, Subdivision 1B, to allow candidates the option of using the scores from the TPA, the board-approved performance assessment, to meet the pedagogy assessment required for licensure. All initial licensure candidates are required to complete the TPA, and that option could really help save candidates some time and money in meeting licensure requirements if they are meeting the board passing scores. We support the A1 amendment to repeal the basic skills testing provision from the statute, also in the governor's bill, 3186. There's no research that shows passing those basic skills tests in reading, writing, and math is a good indicator of a teacher's effectiveness in the classroom. And again, removing that requirement would save candidates time and money in meeting their licensure requirements. Additionally, MACTE would like to see this bill include the removal of the option of 3 years of successful Tier 2 teaching as a path to obtain a Tier 3 licensure requirement, as is now included in House File 3186, Section 3, Subdivisions 2 and 5. Any candidate who's been teaching on a Tier 2 license for 3 years or more would be able to apply for their licensure by portfolio if they choose not to pursue licensure at a teacher preparation program. And asking our professional educator licensure and standards boards to issue a full professional license to a candidate who's done nothing to document mastery of the standards of effective practice or their content knowledge, to us, makes no sense. No other profession offers a path to full licensure without documentation of meeting those licensure standards. This option should not be available to those who work with our students, and particularly when other viable paths exist for them. So we ask you to add this to House File 3580. Should I speak for this one as well, or wait for that one? Wait for that one.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there anybody else in the audience that would like to testify? Seeing none, we will open it up to the floor to members. Are there, we have Representative Erdahl has a question for the author for.
Both of them, yeah.
Okay.
Whatever.
Go ahead, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Dr. Bonsetter first. The changes regarding teaching pedagogy, I mean, are you still going to teach that?
Oh, heavens yes. Yeah, the candidates, the teacher performance assessment, the EdTPA, has a really strong research background that candidates who do well on that performance assessment will perform well in their first years of teaching. And it actually is a performance assessment. They are scored on their ability to plan instruction, to deliver that. They're videotaped and then assess student learning based on that. And it's all scored by trained scorers as part of the scale from Stanford. Minnesota has, the Pelsby has set a passing score for each individual task, which is actually different from other states in our country that use the EdTPA. And so we are very confident that if candidates do well on the EdTPA, we have clear documentation that they will be, you know, sound candidates in the classroom and they've met those pedagogical standards.
Representative?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think that's important. I mean, one of the criticisms that I've had in the past of being maybe a little too loose with bringing in alternative teaching programs is that maybe they know the content area but don't know how to teach.
Exactly.
And so I do think that that's important. Now, I have another question.
Representative Erdahl.
And this, I think maybe Mr. Liu would be answering this. Sorry if I said your name wrong. I stuttered. Okay, a few years back, we had a teacher here, actually one of his parents are my constituents. He was from my district. And some of you around the table will remember this. Others came later on and won't. But he was a very fine art teacher and received the Teacher of the Year Award from his school district for his excellence in art teaching. However, he couldn't pass the reading test. He had some disabilities that simply would not enable him to do so. And so he was eventually let go from his position. They gave him all the variances they could, and he was done teaching there. I think I have not talked with him in a long time. He may have found another job in education. But I want to know, under the changes here now, not having to pass the skills in reading, writing, and math, would this impact him, someone like that?
Mr. Luisi.
Madam Chair, Representative, it would. By removing that individual could become a Tier 4 teacher.
Representative Erdahl.
Well, that's some of the better news I've heard for a while on this, so thank you. Appreciate that.
Members, any other questions? All right. Seeing none, Chair Joachim, any closing thoughts?
Yes, thank you. I'm excited about this bill. As a mother of a student who's in the middle of his student teaching right now at Northdale Middle School and having watched him go through all the testing, I think it's a lot of the changes in here are good. He still feels like he's very prepared in the classroom. University of Minnesota Morris did a good job. And I've been using him for information and floating ideas by him since he's so new to doing this whole entire process. So I think we all share the goal of having licensed and highly qualified teachers in our classroom. And this bill will help Pelsby have the tools to make sure that this happens. And I ask for your support and would renew the motion to move House File 3580 as amended to the Government Operations and Elections Committee.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. The Chair renews the motion that House File 3580, as amended, be re-referred to the Government Operations Committee. Is there any further discussion on this bill, on this motion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. House File 3580, as amended, is re-referred to the Government Operations Committee. All right, we are moving right along. We have next Chair Joachim's House File 3186 up for consideration again today. Chair Joachim, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House File 3186 before us.
Chair Joachim moves House File 3168 before the committee. House File 3186 before the committee. It is the chair's intention to lay over the bill for future consideration. Chair Joachim, would you like to present your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Like you said, it's my intention to just have us have a thorough discussion today and then lay the bill over for further consideration. You will see provisions in this bill moving on their own as we make our way through to first deadline. The bill is structured in four different articles. Article 1 revolves around ensuring all of our students receive a world-class education. Article 2 has provisions to guarantee that our schools are safe and nurturing environments for all of our students. Article 3 makes sure that we have highly qualified teachers in our classrooms. And Article 4 has policies that are a little more technical in nature that update definitions and timelines. I have with me today a variety of folks from MDE, starting with Commissioner Mary Catherine Ricker. I believe. Maybe. Yeah. There we go.
Good afternoon. Welcome to our committee. Please identify yourself for the record, and you may begin your testimony.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Mary Catherine Ricker, and I am Commissioner of Education. And first, I want to say happy Bus Driver Appreciation Day to everyone. And then thank you for taking the time, letting me to hear Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan's education policy bill. As we were crafting our policy proposals for this legislative session, we kept our work centered on equity for our students. Because we all believe that every student, no matter their race or zip code, should receive a world-class education that is taught by caring and qualified educators in a safe and nurturing school environment. An important part of this is making sure we end discipline disparities, beginning with our youngest learners. That's why I'm advocating to prohibit the dismissal of students in our school-based pre-kindergarten programs like voluntary pre-kindergarten. Something else I believe many of you have heard me talk about is our work to end high school dropouts while raising the four-year graduation rate and making sure a diploma means a student is ready for what's next, career, college, and community. One of the student groups that disproportionately has students who drop out are students experiencing homelessness and housing instability. And if we truly believe that education can be the great equalizer, and I think we're in this room because we believe that, then we need to be doing more to help those students find their own success. That's why I want to establish standards for credit accrual and recovery for students experiencing housing instability or homelessness, so more and more of those students can reach their graduation finish line that will open up more of life's options. These are just a handful of the policies we have brought forward this year to support our students. And with me today are a number of my outstanding colleagues from the Minnesota Department of Education to present additional highlights of our bill. They include Doug Paulson, Director of Academic Standards, who will present updates to standards requirements to make sure all students have a world-class education. Dr. Jane Harstad, Director of Indian Education, who will present policies to center our American Indian students. Caitlin Snyder, Deputy Director of Government Relations, who will present licensure changes to make sure all students have access to caring and qualified educators. Mary Kay Kanaga-Litzkow, Director of Compliance, who will present recommendations on non-exclusionary disciplinary policies and practices, because our students can't get a world-class education if they aren't in our classrooms. And Greg Keith, Director of School Support, who will present a number of recommendations relating to cultural responsiveness and safe and welcoming schools. Madam Chair, thank you for the time to be here today. Thank you, Representative Ewing.
Thank you, Commissioner. I think next on our list, we will ask Doug Paulson, Director of Academic Standards, to come to the testifying table. After Doug, we will ask Dr. Jane Harstead to testify, and then Kate Snyder after that. Mary Kay Litzo, Director of Compliance, after her, and then Greg Keith, Director of School Support, after that. So if you would like to state your name, and you can begin your testimony, please.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. My name is Doug Paulson, and I serve as a Director of Academic Standards at the Minnesota Department of Education. I've been asked today to talk about the language that we are proposing to clean up inconsistencies between Statute 120B.021 and 120B.024. You were given a handout that looks like this. So a table that has four different columns. The first column is the subject matter by which we have academic standards that have been identified. Second column is the standards requirements from 120B.021. Third column is the credit requirements from 120B.024. And then the final column is where we saw inconsistencies that we are bringing forth today. The foundation of the work that we look at here is really set in 120B.02, which was the commitment that set by the legislature to establish rigorous career and college readiness academic standards for students, and requiring that students demonstrate their understanding of the academic standards through the satisfactory completion of the credit requirements. It is in the alignment that over the years, as we have added additional statutes, as well as we've gone through the rulemaking process with MDE and stakeholders, that we've had some inconsistencies that have developed over time between these statutes. These inconsistencies have been brought to our attention through many correspondence from school counselors, school administrators, and parents who are looking to guidance from the department on what is needed for graduation between the credits, the required standards, or both. These inconsistencies we've also found through a number of the survey and other feedback tools that we've had as we've undergone our standards revision over the last several years in physical education, fine arts, science, English language arts, and as we move into our social studies review for next year. Again, I want to identify that through this is not looking at a policy change, rather this is a technical change to align the 120B.021 with 120B.024. This has no change of policy on requirements or flexibility, and it will continue on that commitment that all students have the rigorous education. So the first one I'd like to highlight on this document is the fine arts. This is a location where we have two changes that we are proposing, both of which have come up through the conversations for our standards. Throughout our standards review, we heard from educators that there is strong support for us to start that process utilizing the National Core Art Standards, as in addition to the Minnesota State Standards, the National Core Art Standards was the second document the district used to really guide instruction for their work. We heard that throughout this process that districts were looking for more support around implementation of the standards, and that was the number one thing that they were really looking for as we rolled these standards out. So this proposal really aligns with some of the comments we've received and aligns art with the other core academic areas by having the state required standards and removing the local standards, which we have looked and not found any districts that have fully developed their own local standards. As can seen by a number of letters of support that we've received from the Purpose Center for Arts Education, the Minnesota Citizens for the Arts, the Minnesota Music Educators Association, the Dance Educator Coalition of Minnesota, and Arts Educators of Minnesota. The arts communities see this really as a positive direction for the work in supporting teachers and learning for students as they are able to focus around support for the standards. We are excited about these partnerships with these professional organizations, that there's a comprehensive support network focused on the state standards and can provide maximum support while still giving districts full autonomy and flexibility on the curriculum and instructional delivery. In addition, we also are looking to add within the language consistency with the K-8 arts as we have with the 9-12 arts. In the 9-12 arts, we give the option of 5 different arts areas. In the elementary, media arts was not included in that. And so we're proposing to add the media arts, as we've had a number of districts that have looked to the media arts as one of the opportunities they have to deliver a arts education at the elementary level. So these are technical changes that really support the work that's been done through the standards and really aligns a lot of the support networks that we have for districts. The other changes are found through 120B024. And I'll start with the mathematics as one of the edits that we're looking for within this. The mathematics language indicates an Algebra 1 credit is required by the end of 8th grade. This demonstrates alignment with the standards, which are algebra at 8th grade, and this ensures that students are well prepared for high school. Numerous documents of research have identified that for students going into a strong STEM high school experience, having a strong 8th grade math education is important, and that's why we called out the Algebra 1. The high school, though, we have had a number of questions regarding if the Algebra 1 is a high school bearing credit. At high school, there's approximately a year and a half of algebra, a half a year of data probability, and a year of geometry that builds from the grade 8 algebra standards. Since Algebra 1 and Algebra 2 are the only courses called out in statute, it's important to classify that high school, that Algebra 1 is not a high school bearing credit. In the past 3 years, we've had confusion of this, which almost cost a student an opportunity to compete at NCAA level, where the department had to review the transcript to ensure that the Algebra 1 that was on the transcript was indeed content at the high school level rather than the 8th grade level. The next discipline I'd like to identify within this statute is around science. Science has continued to be confusion for districts, particularly as we have had the revision of our science standards. In the statute, we had the term elective, and that was placed in the statute several years ago to highlight that includes all standards that were not in the biology or chemistry or physics courses. Therefore, this course was made up of the remaining nature of science and engineering, physical science, earth and space science standards and benchmarks. It was not intended to be a credit of any course, but rather the course made up of all those standards. The Standards Revision Committee, made up of K-12 educators from throughout the state, higher education faculty, and community members, identified that there was inconsistency with how this was being delivered throughout the state, and also got a lot of feedback that that oftentimes that third credit was more than what one credit of learning really should be. So as they reviewed feedback from almost 2,000 stakeholders, they made a decision that to be career and college ready, you need to have a stronger high school experience in earth and space science, and also a foundation of physical science lab experience at 8th grade to prepare them for the high school standards. As we revise the standards, moving the previous physical science standards at high school were moved to 8th grade and aligned to the 8th grade mathematics standards, giving a strong, cohesive experience. And this allowed us to remove the previous hodgepodge of concepts at high school to provide a more cohesive content storyline for students at the high school level that's focused around earth and space science. The proposed language does not change the requirements. Students are still required for 3 credits. Those 3 credits must satisfy all the standards, and districts must ensure that students achieve all benchmarks for those standards. This is simply to call out what the standards are in that third credit. This proposal is supported by both the Minnesota Science Teacher Association and the Minnesota Earth Science Teacher Association, as identified through letters from the president. Finally, we have the proposal. The proposal highlights the inconsistency between the required physical education standards that the legislature directed in 2016 for the department to adopt the 2014 Shape America standards and benchmarks. When we required the standards and benchmarks, it's important that the credit statute really reinforce the requirements for the standards. As indicated by the letter of support from the Minnesota Society of Health and Physical Educators, or MNSHAPE, In 2015, 61% of Minnesota high schools required a full credit. As districts have taken on the new standards and look to implement those, the Minnesota Rural Ed Association conducted a survey of 160 districts and identified that 81% now required one credit or more. As we are looking to implement the standards fully, this is important to be able to call out. And so while this changes the elective standards to 6, it's not really changing practice nor the requirements. It's just being more transparent that one of those elective credits is physical education. It's important to note that these are all technical changes. They're being proposed to clear the alignment, be clear about the alignment between 120B021 and 120B.024. And it's really to continue the commitment that we have for all students to graduate being career and college ready through the rigorous academic standards. It's important to note, this does not change flexibility for districts to determine the curriculum or teaching methodologies. It also does not change the flexibility for CTE to provide education in science, math, or the arts. That's important to be able to have the connections and integrations across there. MDE and our professional education partners, the Minnesota Science Teacher Association, the Minnesota Earth and Space Science Teachers Association, the Minnesota Council of Teachers of Mathematics, MinShape, the Minnesota Music Educators Association, Dance Educator Coalition of Minnesota, and the Arts Educators of Minnesota, as well as the other state agency, the Purpich Center for Arts Education, are committed to supporting teachers, districts, and students to ensure that all the learning is equitable so that as they graduate from high school, they have met the high academic expectations. Mm. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Paulson. Next, we have Dr. Jane Harstad from Director of Indian Education.
Good afternoon.
Would you please state your name and begin your testimony?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am Dr. Jane Harstad. I work with and serve at the Minnesota Department of Education as the Director of Indian Education and the Tribal Liaison to Minnesota's 11 tribes. Thank you for this opportunity to help American Indian students reach their full potential within their school communities through meaningful, equitable, and targeted educational experiences that affirms and values their unique cultural identities. I am working from the governor's policy bill highlights page. The specific items I'd like to highlight today are, the first is students being able to wear eagle feathers and tribal regalia at graduation ceremonies. Each year, the Office of Indian Education and the Department of Education receive calls from parents in tears whose students are not able to wear their regalia or an eagle feather at graduation. And an eagle feather is a high honor for our students to receive, and it means that they have overcome a lot to be able to accomplish the task of graduation. And so we'd like to make sure that they are able to do that from now forward. The second piece I'd like to highlight is the state count of American Indian students. In recent years, new federal definitions of American Indian have hidden or masked our American Indian student count. And in Minnesota, we have used a state count in calculating the formulation for Indian education aid. And we'd like to continue to use that count moving forward so that we have a more accurate count of our American Indian students. From what we know of our data, the federal count masks up to one-third of our American Indian students from being reported in data. And we'd like to continue with using that state count to make sure that we are having the correct data for our public, for our parents, and understanding that the state count is more accurate than the federal count that we need to use at this point.
Thank you very much, Dr. Harstad. Next, we would ask Kate Snyder to join us. Please state your name and you may begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Caitlin Snyder, a rare double first name with the Minnesota Department of Education. And I am working from the same handout that Dr. Harstad referenced under the licensure and bargaining unit changes. A focus of this administration and Commissioner Ricker in particular is uplifting the teaching and learning condition, making sure that our teachers have the tools that they need to be successful in the classroom. So the proposals that we're bringing forward to you today should be fairly familiar to you. I believe they were in the House Omnibus Bill last year. So the first change would allow Tier 1 teachers to join the bargaining unit. This is a voluntary decision that public employees can choose to make and is located in Article 3, Section 2. The second change would be requiring pedagogical training to be a Tier 3 or Tier 4 teacher. So this would mean you either take a Minnesota teacher prep program, another state-approved teacher prep program, or pursue your licensure via portfolio. This is not intended to be a shift away from Tier 1 or Tier 2 teachers. We recognize that there's a teacher shortage across the state, but this is about making sure that our teachers that are choosing a lifetime profession have the tools that they need to be successful. This isn't changing the renewals that are in place in the statute for Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers. Excuse me. The third change is in Article 3, Section 4. This was referenced in the previous bill, and it would remove the basic skills test requirement for all teachers. We started a conversation internally with the House position last year, which allowed administrators to waive the basic skills test. But upon consideration, it seemed unworkable in that it would still require teachers pursue the exam, pay for the exam, struggle for the exam, and not be able to pass it and pay for it out of hand before having this requirement waived. So this seemed to be, based on the research available to us and about how it's predictive or not predictive for teacher efficacy, a better, we would say, proposal to bring forward at this time. The fourth change is in Article 3, Section 5, and it would add our early childhood family education teachers and our adult basic education teachers to continuing contract protections. And this was also located in the House Omnibus Bill last year. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Snyder. Next, I'd ask Mary Kay Litzo to join us at the testimony table. Please state your name for the record, and you may testify.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Mary Kay Kanega Litzo, and I'm the Director of Compliance and Assistance at the Minnesota Department of Education. This afternoon, I'd like to provide some highlights from Article 2 of the Governor's Education Policy Bill that pertain to non-exclusionary disciplinary policy and practices. It can follow along with those in the highlights section. The proposed provisions focus on proactive measures to address pupil behavior in a non-exclusionary manner. The Commissioner testified earlier regarding the need to end discipline disparities. As part of MDE's handout with the highlights, we've grouped the proposed changes under non-exclusionary policies and practices into four bullets, and I'll briefly highlight some of those changes. Under the first bullet, kindergarten through 12 non-exclusionary policies and practices, which is in section 7 of the bill, includes a definition of that term to focus on alternatives to pupil removal and dismissal. The non-exclusionary definition includes a number of resources a school can use to intervene, redirect, and support a pupil's behavior. The bill also includes a definition of pupil withdrawal agreement. Those are used to avoid expulsion or exclusion, and they've been happening for some time, but we have not, that data is not collected, and it's some students receive services during that period and some do not. So this is a way to have a definition and to ensure that there's reporting and that those students are receiving services during that dismissal period. The third section, minimum educational services, ensures that during the period of a school dismissal, pupils are given the opportunity to complete the work they miss and receive full credit for their work. That's in section 12 of the bill. There's also the addition of the definition of in-school suspension, which is occurring in our schools, but we don't have a statutory definition, and a revision to the definition of out-of-school suspension, which is in section 6 of the bill. The fourth bullet adds a new statute to the Pupil Fair Dismissal Act entitled Full and Equitable Participation in Preschool and Pre-Kindergarten. National data collected since 2005 has documented that children in school-based preschool programs are suspended at higher rates than school-aged children. Data from the Civil Rights Data Collection 11-12 and 13-14 document that black children in public preschool programs are suspended from those programs at a higher rate than white children. Recognizing the importance of early education and the need to end disciplinary disparities, the proposed language includes the following. Districts and charter schools must use non-exclusionary discipline as described in the statute, rather than disciplinary dismissals, to ensure full and equitable participation for children attending those public preschool programs. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kanaga-Litsu. Thank you much. Next, we are going to bring, we have one last testifier, Mr. Keith, please. Director of School Support. If you would like to identify yourself for the record, and then you may begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Greg Keith. I'm the Director of School Support at the Minnesota Department of Education, and today is my birthday.
Ooh, happy birthday to you.
I am here to talk through four proposals in the bill for around culturally responsive practices in schools and districts. First of all, I'm just going to, for a second, why do we need culturally responsive practices? I think we'd all agree that the social and cultural contexts of today's schools are diverse in ways, increasingly diverse in ways, that require greater attention to the educational philosophies, backgrounds, and perspectives of school leaders and teachers. The cultural and racial identities of students and those who serve them have long continued to represent a demographic divide. And when students experience an incompatibility between their school and home cultures, that impacts their school experience and their achievement. Culturally responsive practices requires that individuals be culturally competent. This competency is having an awareness of your own cultural identity, your views about differences between people, and the ability to learn and build on the varying cultural and community norms of students, their families, and their communities. It is the ability to understand the within-group differences that make each student unique, while celebrating the between-group variations that make our world a tapestry. We are proposing four changes to statute to support culturally responsive practices in schools and in districts. In Article 1, we are proposing to change 124D861, which is the Achievement and Integration Program, to specify additional optional activities that are allowable in A&I programs. All of these activities are currently allowed in the previous law, but we believe by codifying them in statute, we're taking a more proactive stance in support of culturally responsive practices in our achievement and integration programs. Article 1, we're proposing to change 120B11, which is the world's best workforce legislation, to require that district plans include a couple of more elements around culturally responsive workplaces and culturally responsive practices. First of all, we would like to require that students' multicultures are represented in curriculum and in instructional practices. Secondly, we'd like to increase access to excellent and diverse teachers. And then finally, that all students and educators participate in workplaces and learning environments that are culturally responsive. Finally, we are proposing in Article 3, excuse me, I don't have the other article here, my apologies. We are proposing to change 123B147, which is the principal evaluation statute, and 122A40, which is the teacher evaluation statute, to require that culturally responsive practices be incorporated, the expectation for culturally responsive practices be incorporated into teacher and principal evaluation activities and rubrics.
Well, thank you, Mr. Keith, and happy birthday to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. We have a number of testifiers, and I'd just like to remind those testifiers coming up, you've got about 2 minutes each, and we will be timing you. And I'm going to name off the first couple, and then I will list you as you go. So we would like to first hear from Dr. Fred Nolan, second, Dr. Najayan Patters, third, Sarah Ann Shanley. Please state your name, and you may begin your 2-minute testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Fred Nolan, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Rural Education Association. I want to focus today on the science standards requirements 8.14 to 1.8. And the memo to the commissioner and the chair, which is this. You may want to pull this out because I'm going to reference in my testimonies from specific language changes. I respect the work of the Science Standards Committee. They're dedicated, knowledgeable, and passionate about their field, but they've made a significant increase in the 9-12 Earth and Space Science benchmarks. It's 7 detailed pages. I thank the Commissioner Ricker for being transparent about this change and bringing forth the proposal to add an Earth and Space credit. But this eliminates the elective credit, which is how in 120B.024, Ag Science and CTE credits may fulfill a science credit. As Mr. Paulson referenced, we surveyed 230 members, got 160 responses in 3 days. I'm going to give you a couple numbers to jot down. 70 schools, nearly half, allow CTE and ag credit for science credit. In those schools, 30% of the students are taking those courses. They're popular courses of food chemistry, animal science. Since 2003, when the Minnesota Academic Standards started, we've learned that not all careers need a 4-year degree. The fastest growing careers are in technical fields. And we've even adopted the world's best workforce, which is trying to align our schools to workforce needs. Ag science and CTE courses do that. Therefore, we oppose the language as proposed. However, I caution the committee that given the work of the Science Standards Committee, which has increased the science standards, which will presumably become rule, you cannot do nothing and leave it as it is. Because 8.16, in line 8.16, it clearly says under current statute, you gotta read the strikeouts, the combination of credits under this clause must be sufficient to satisfy all the academic standards in other chemistry and physics. And if you look at 120B.03, all schools must offer and students must achieve all benchmarks for academic standards to successfully complete the state standards.
Thank you. I'm sorry, Dr. Nolan, but you are out of time. And I believe you all have a letter and information from the Minnesota Rural Association. Next, we would like to hear from Dr. Najayan.
Madam Chair, is there a way we could just give him, he's got just one more point. I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
We will do that.
So that is why we recommend the changes that you see in the memo, because they do allow students to have choices to meet standards at standard level, but just not all students are going to get all standards. And so therefore, I'm willing to work with the chair, and thank you for your time in the committee.
Thank you, Dr. Nolan. All right, Dr. Najayan Patters, please. Well, not seeing Dr. Patters, we will go on to Sarah Shanley, and then from there, after her, Deb Henton, and then Scott Kroonquist, please.
Thank
State
you, Madam
your
Chair.
Name. And,
oh. Yep. And members of the committee, my name is Sarah Shanley, and I'm speaking to you on behalf of the Minnesota Association for Career and Technical Administrators, MACTA, who represent CTE administrators from across the state. And thank you very much for allowing time to talk about the concerns MACTA has with House File 3186. MACTA is concerned with the language in lines 8.14 through 8.16, specifying the third science credit as Earth and Science, rather than allowing it to be an elective credit. This seemingly small provision has a negative impact on CTE programs that allow many students in school districts to offer science credit through practical applications in our CTE courses. By specifying a science discipline that is not aligned to CTE programming, it takes significant opportunities away from hundreds of our CTE students. MACTA is strongly opposed to any change in tiered licensure, most specifically the striking of lines 28.20 through 28.23, by limiting the ability for Tier 2 teacher to move to Tier 3 through 3 years of successful teaching experience. It eliminates pathways to permanent licenses for many career and technical areas, especially relating to CTE and all of our pathway instructors for which there are no other options to perpetual Tier 1, and providing zero stability to teachers and programs. CTE is already at a critical shortage in teachers, Nearly half of our CTE teachers were on Tier 1, Tier 2, or special permissions last year. This removal of this option would be devastating to our robust and growing CTE programs across the state and would have long-lasting negative impacts on our students, and ultimately, it's the workforce of our state. Thank you very much.
Thank you much. Next, we have Deb Henton. Please state your name, and you can begin your testimony.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Deb Henton. I'm the superintendent at North Branch Area Public Schools. I'm also the past president of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, and I'm the incoming executive director. I will be moving into that position when Gary Amoroso retires, and I know some of you are familiar with Gary, so you will be seeing my face quite often, perhaps at this table. We are very grateful for the teacher tenure law. It has allowed flexibility, especially for suburban districts, urban districts, rural districts, really all of us that are struggling with finding teachers in really hard to fill areas, as was mentioned by the previous testifier. Sometimes we have openings for a long time that we're not able to fill, and when we find somebody that fits the bill and builds a relationship with kids and their colleagues, and we invest all of our economic resources into developing those teachers, we find a great deal of success with them, and thus we are opposed to any language change under Article Number 3, Subdivision 2, coursework, lines 28.20 through 28.23, which would no longer allow 3 years of successful teaching experience under Tier 2 licensure for an individual to move on to a Tier 3 licensure. The economic cost, again, would be great, and the relational cost would also be great. Something that not all people think about is teachers do so much more than just teach in a classroom setting. Oftentimes they're advisors, they're coaches, and we struggle to fill those areas just like we do in the classroom. So we're grateful for this teacher tenure tiered licensure law. We'd like to see the provision under 28.20 and 28.23 remain and not be stricken. Thank you so much for this opportunity to speak before you today.
Thank you, Ms. Henton. And next we have Mr. Kroonquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Scott Kroonquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, and thank you for the opportunity to share a few brief comments, and I'll try not to be duplicative. First of all, I want to just say we strongly support the proposals to amend the World Best Workforce and Achievement Integration Laws to include creating school environments that are culturally responsive, inclusive, and respectful for students, staff, and families. And this is very consistent with the Reimagine Minnesota work that I think many of you are familiar with and that our school districts are engaged in. We're likewise very supportive of the efforts to increase the percentage of teachers of color and American Indian teachers. And so that is the same reason, though, that we are opposed to the eliminating the pathways, specifically the pathway from Tier 2 to Tier 3, as Superintendent Henton just mentioned. And then I also would echo Mr. Nolan's comments about the concerns in the area of the science credits, and similarly requiring a full credit of Phi Ed. The feedback I'm getting from our districts is that will, in fact, reduce elective opportunities for our students. I'm hearing that they are able to cover the Phi Ed standards right now in less than one full credit. So I'll stop there, Madam Chair and members. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much. I would just like to remind folks that we would ask you to keep as brief as possible because we are going to be laying this on the table, and there will be time for further discussion on some of these provisions, and we have just until 4 o'clock to do a number more speakers. So next I would like to call up Daniel Sellers. And then we'll have Terry Wiley, Denise Dietrich, Mary Gilbert Dowdry, and then Roger Aronson.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. My name is Daniel Sellers with Ed Allies. I encourage you to read some of the written testimony you received, which includes principals, teachers, and advocates who are concerned about the proposed changes to teacher licensure on page 28, which has been referenced. I'll just quickly say I hope you'll read Christine Garriday's testimony and ask yourself, why in the world would we want teachers such as Ms. Garriday's to jump through hoops just to get a permanent teaching license? She's already an effective educator. She has a master's degree in education and curriculum. She's worked professionally in the field in which she's teaching, and we're going to ask teachers like her to go back and jump through arbitrary hoops. Let's not go backwards. Let's stop trying to reenact these barriers. and let's work together to find more qualified, diverse teachers and help them get permanent licenses in Minnesota. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Seller. Next, we'll have Terry Wiley. Please state your name and you may begin your testimony.
Hi, I'm Terry Wiley, and I'm at the Heights Elementary School. I am here as a teacher, a parent, and an advocacy fellow for Educators for Excellence. And I'm here to talk about the two issues that align with E4E's legislative agenda. And the first issue is a teacher licensure, and the second is a non-exclusionary discipline policy. We oppose change to the teacher licensure because, like most people have said, it supports a pathway for Tier 2 from Tier 2 to Tier 3 based on positive teacher evaluation. And we are supportive of the governor's language to promote non-exclusionary discipline policy. One of the things that I've learned as an educator is how important it is to build relationships with students. And that is one way that we can get students to stay in class. We want students to stay in class. So building relationships is just one way, although there are many ways. Suspending children is not the answer. So that's it.
Thank you very much, Ms. Wiley. Denise Dietrich, please come down. State your name and you may begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Denise Dietrich, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota School Boards Association. MSBA is a statewide organization, and we serve 333 school boards across the state. We want to thank Commissioner Ricker for her accessibility this session as she prepared House File 3186. And due to the limited time today, we have provided a detailed letter to the commissioner in response to the bill. But for today, I'd like to highlight just a few of our concerns. In Article 1, Sections 3 and 6, that would eliminate an elective credit for high school students. It is elective high school credits that engage students, and it allows the individual school districts to meet the needs of individual students. And it also helps school boards to strive to prepare students for college and career readiness. So we are opposed to eliminating that elective credit. In Article 2, the school meals section, MSBA has worked with legal aid, and we have a mutually agreed upon language for the school lunch piece, and so that will be heard on Friday, and we hope that the commissioner will support that. Also in Article 2, under Safe and Supportive Schools Programming, MSBA is concerned with the change from schools are encouraged to schools must language. And all seven of those items seem subjective and would be difficult to implement and measure. For example, item number 4, how does a district train student bystanders to intervene in incidents of prohibitive conduct? Is there any potential liability to the districts in concern of school safety? While we totally support social emotional learning, we would like to continue working with the department on some of that language. Article 3, it continues to be our position that the legislature make no changes to the tiered licensure system. And in addition, it is our position that the local school boards maintain their flexibility to staff ABE and ECFE programs based on the needs and the demands of the local community. And with that, Madam Chair, I will conclude my comments.
Thank you. Thank you, testifier. Next, we have Mary Gilbert Doherty, and then last, we will have Roger Aronson, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. I'm Mary Doherty from the St. Paul Public Schools, and briefly, I'd like to touch on the standards revisions. I would urge the committee to reinstate the stricken language on page 4.19, which allows, under the ART standards, that allows for locally developed academic standards. We don't know why it was taken out. Related to the science standards, while it may appear technical to some folks, there's some real practical implications about trying to implement them. Right now, and our science folks think it's a worthy goal, but that the time horizon in place is just way too aggressive. Right now, we have only 9 of 27 teachers that would have the appropriate license if this went in place at the time outlined in the bill. And if earth science is required, we would only have 2 of 27 that would be eligible. So to get the certification or the correct license, I mean, this takes time, money, and we would have to try and come up with how our teachers are going to meet the changes. As far as the PE standard goes, we are having a terrible time hiring PE teachers right now. We've hired several Tier 1 licensed teachers, and they're struggling because they haven't had the training. It took us a whole all fall to replace one of our PE teachers that we lost. And I have to say that of all the complaints we get from students and parents at high school, it's about we require a half credit of PE right now, and I would say we have the most complaints about that right now, especially for students who participate in sports. Our students want to do CIS, or they want to do Spanish and Chinese. They want to do more AP or IB. They want to have the option of taking courses and adding a whole year of PE. I don't recall, even with the standards change, that we ever discussed it here at the legislature, that it would go for a year as well. So I would urge the committee to slow down on these changes and think about what the practical implications are for districts to actually try and implement some of these things. And possibly I would suggest that if we look at standard revisions, we maybe look at what a local impact note would be or what the effect would be on districts to try and implement these. Because I know when teachers come and they do the standards, they're very excited about having lots of them. And I think sometimes we end up with more than we can do in the allotted time that we have during the school year.
Thank you, Ms. Dart.
Thank you very much.
Yes, and now we have Roger Aronson, please.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Roger Aronson. I represent the Elementary and Secondary School Principals Associations, and just a couple of comments here. One of the things we want to acknowledge out front is that the department staff brought us in, the superintendents and the principals, to talk about the standards before they were rolled out, and we really do appreciate that particular model of working with the department when they come on and talk about these. That being said, we do join in the concerns that our colleagues raised and the availability of licensures and some of the issues that would confront us if this actually became the rule. Second piece in my minute and a half, just to draw your attention to, there's a provision in section 11 at line 12.3 that talks about a curriculum policy. And we did have the opportunity to talk with the department and the commissioner about this last week. But that provision is talking about prohibiting discrimination or discipline for the integration of curriculum contributions. You might want to think about that a little bit of not having that in the collective bargaining process and looking at that in meet and confer and some other areas. It does pose some unique issues. And also, there are some responses to that as well last year we had some problems with on the Senate side. So something that we want to talk about. The goal there is absolutely right. We agree with that as it was described to us by the department last week. And we think that we could do some good things there. We need a few language changes. So we look forward to working with you. And Madam Chair, good job.
Mm-hmm. Thank you much. Members, we just have a few minutes here. We could possibly go a few minutes, maybe till 5 after. So if you have comments, would you please make them very quick and concise? We have session at 4:15. First on the list is Representative Erdahl.
Madam Chair, I can't do this quickly. Except for one, Mr. Paulson, if he would come up just for one quick question.
And Representative Erdahl, remember this is going to be laid over, and we will have time to discuss these things another time.
Put me back in the list for next time.
I will.
I got a lot
right
more.
On top.
Representative Erdahl. Madam Chair, Mr. Paulson, I would just like to ask, when you did your summary, you went from science to FIET. What you skipped over social studies. Would you care to explain the plan for social studies?
Mr. Paulson.
Representative Erdahl, Madam Chair. This is specifically looking at the inconsistencies between the two statutes at this point in time. And at this point in time, there's not the inconsistencies with social studies.
Thank you. Mr. Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There are two examples here, and there's an or 3.5 credits or 3 credits. What does that mean,
Mr. Paulson?
Representative Erdahl, Madam Chair, in statute allows for credit equivalency, and so half a credit can be in economics taught through business education or agriculture education. And so if they choose to do a half credit in economics, then it's 3 credits sufficient to satisfy the rest of the standards.
That's current
Representative
law.
Erdahl.
Thank you. That's current law.
Mr. Paulson.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, that is correct. That's current law.
Representative Erdahl.
Madam Chair, I'll reserve the rest of my comments to help people understand things a little more clearly next time.
Thank you, Representative. Next, we have Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would just hope that the commissioner and the bill's author were listening to some of these concerns. I share many of the concerns that were shared today, and I have several others. So I look forward to when we're able to discuss this as a committee further. I'll save my questions for then, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Scott. And next we have Representative Barr.
I'm just going to save mine until we readdress this. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative. Next we have Representative Grunhagen.
I'll save it.
Thank you. And Representative Baker.
Just more of a statement, Madam Chair. Again, as a second year member on this committee, I would like to have more of a conversation with maybe the commissioner or folks to talk about special education. There was not a single mention of reducing paperwork in special ed. And this is one thing that I've got a bill in the committee waiting and hoping for a hearing on that. But I just know that that's something that I am desperate to try to get some attention from the department to try to help reduce the paperwork on this thing. I was assuming it was going to be something that was coming up today, but it did not. And again, as I've heard too today, I'm looking forward to it coming back because I'm concerned that a lot of important CTE stuff that was discussed that they're really having a hard time with that is becoming more challenging to keep those teachers that are keeping our young people ready to get to the workforce. So looking forward to more conversation, but I would like to have some follow-up with the Department on Special Education. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Baker. And thank you, Chair Joaquim. Just to remind everybody, House File 3186 is laid over for future consideration. Did you have any last moment statements?
I'd just like to thank members, and I want to thank the testifiers that from the department, but also especially thank the testifiers that voiced concerns. Many of you have talked to me in my office. I take what you're saying to heart, and we will be having more discussions around some of these provisions, but the majority of this bill will be laid on the table. But if there's stuff people like, they can pull it out and make it into an individual bill as well. So thank you, members, and see you on the floor.
Madam Chair.
Thank you much. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A quick show and tell. Before I came here, just before this meeting, I was presented this. In 1970, I scored in intramural basketball at St. Cloud State 30 points in one game, and this is the floor of that game.
Wow, congratulations, Representative Erdahl. What a big day. We've got birthdays. It's National Bus Driver Day. Representative Erdahl gets a piece of flooring. It's a big day. Just want to remind everybody that next meeting is Friday, February 28th at 9 a.m. in Room 5. Please plan to be there until approximately 2 p.m. This meeting is adjourned.